I want to welcome Agile XRM to the podcast. I've known the people at Agile XRM for the past 12 years. I've seen how their business process management tool can add massive value to complex organizational processes in sectors such as finance and government. If you have complex processes or a need for dialogues on the Power Platform or Dynamics 365, take a look at how this BPM tool can add value. You can find them at agilexrm.com or check out the show notes for more details. Welcome to the Power Platform Show. Thanks for joining me today. I hope today's guest inspires and educates you on the possibilities of the Microsoft Power Platform. Now, let's get on with the show. In this episode, we'll be focusing on creating scalable center of excellence or communities of engagement within an organization using the Power Platform. Today's guest is from Houston, Texas in the United States. He works as a senior manager, citizen development and COE at Baker Hughes. He's a digital transformation leader and catalyst focusing on talent, culture, and governance for enterprise-wide adoption. You can find links to his bio in the show notes for this episode. Mohammed, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
It's good to have you on, and it's good to be able to unpack your story. But before we get started, I always like to talk a bit about the things that you do when you're not working. What is that for you when it comes to family, food, fun, hobbies? What are your interests that are not involving your career?
I love these questions, kind of try to unpack there. So at the family front, I grew up as part of a big family. So I have six sisters and three brothers that they're just amazing. They, you know, growing together and learning from each other was fantastic. My parents did an amazing job raising us as well. My dad is actually the reason, probably or maybe a major influence in my obsession with technology. So I remember in my childhood sitting next to him, and he is like programming in Clipper, a programming language and compiler that do not exist today. And I would see him sometimes frustrated trying to fix things, and I want to jump in and help. Mind you, I didn't know how to read back then, but this is where my obsession with technology started growing. And when I get to college, I ended up going with engineering rather than computer science. And I was trying to get the computer science route, but my dad was just, and quite frankly, to his credit, he said, "You know what, son, you didn't need to go there. I give you a PhD. You go do and learn something new." So that's where the family component and how it shaped who I am today in technology. Food, I love food. Food unites us. I mean, if you go anywhere, I mean, learning and seeing from these different cuisines. I even enjoy the few times that I kind of try to learn cooking new things and stuff. It's so therapeutic, so nice to do. And it's also nice to see people enjoying what you cook. That too is, it's just like has its own, you know, different, joy. The one thing is that just to be honest with myself, I'm not doing it that often. I need to get back into it. It's so good. And for fun, there are two things mainly, I would say. I love photography, specifically nature, animals. So whenever time permit, I have membership at the zoo. So I would go and enjoy the weather and everything and take very nice pictures. And sometimes I would sit and question myself as like, why didn't I publish these? Just like, you know, for the people to see what I see and these fine details, it's just fascinating. You know, every animal has these amazing details. The other part of the fun is Formula One racing. So I'm so drawn into it. And it's not because of the competitiveness and the race. It's the whole thing around technology, how they push the boundaries in technology, how they, the teamwork aspect of it, how the teams work together and everything. They orchestrate, they do all the pit stop and changing all the tires and everything in 2 to 3 seconds, you know. All of this fascinating to me, and I feel like it feeds the engineer and me and the leader and me to learn, get better on that aspect. So that's in a nutshell some of these different areas that I do out of the Power Platform.
That is incredible. It's incredible. Great and great diversity. A phenomenal size family. I come from a family of 7 siblings, and I thought that was large, but it doesn't compete with your size. So that's
incredible. Oh, yeah, we got you on there. Yeah.
Yeah, you got me on there. That's for real. Yeah. Tell me about how did you get involved then ultimately in the Power Platform? What was that journey for you?
Oh, yeah. So this is a fascinating story for me personally, because what happened is throughout my career, I consider myself a career switcher. So throughout my career, I always applied my technology knowledge, programming and stuff, and trying to build some tools and things that accelerate the work for my team, workflows, stuff like that. Fast forward, the organization is adopting new tools and upgrading, our infrastructure and the services that we have. I turn around and I see Power Apps being enabled in the organization. And a community of early adopters was created. It was really driven in our case from the leadership down. It wasn't from the bottom up. So Anthony Cripps, our CTO, has this vision on the need of that and really having a governance around it and model. So I happened to be one of the very early users to create an app. My first app, it took me about 4 to 5 hours to put together, and it was phenomenal for the group or the team that I'm working with, just because it just gives them all the visibility they need for the what we call the slow moving inventory, which is subset of inventory that they can just look at and find easily and try to utilize. So it was very, very good idea. And then connected with the community, connected with the leadership. A position opened, applied just like everyone else. And then I just couldn't believe it. I'm there. I'm doing it. I'm doing what I love full time. And that was where I jumped from the business side to the IT side to give it 100% of the time.
Amazing. Amazing. Yeah. So before we unpack what you've done in the organization, can you tell me about Baker Hughes? What does it do? I've not come across the brand in my part of the world before. So a bit about that and a bit about, what geographies you operate in and the size of the organization.
Yes, that's a good question. So we in Baker Hughes, we are an energy technology company. So in our focus is taking energy forward, making it safer, for cleaner for people and the planet, and that's the statement we put front and center for us. Baker Hughes originated from the oil field services originally, but the way we are today structured and what we do, we are in different energy areas, not just oil and gas, and we have this commitment to the planet and to us as people, of everyone, to deliver on the clean energy initiatives. We are operating in over 120 countries.
Wow.
We have over 55,000 employees, and we have two big or major segments. We have the oil field services and equipment, which is not just a traditional oil field service. We do have some things that are serving, in the clean energy as well, initiatives around geothermal, carbon capture and utilization and storage and all of that, that will be something that will help us in the interim. And also we have the other segment is the industrial energy and industrial energy and technology segment, which is we are leader in the gas technology, the LNG, and for the end to end when it comes to the gas technology and industrial controls to improve reliability and safety, reduce emissions and stuff like that. So we are, and that's how we are really an energy technology company, not just focused on certain segment of the energy sector. So
Phenomenal. So definitely in the enterprise, when it comes to size of organization, how you mentioned your CTO before and his vision, and it came from the top down, which is, I love that. What was the rationale that you know of for even choosing the Power Platform? And what I mean here, some organizations go, you know what, we need to do app modernization. Some organizations say, we've got so many processes that are so disjointed, we need an orchestration to bring that together. Automation, you know, forms, data, you know, using some of the latest tech around chatbots and now, of course, AI in the mix. What really led your organization down the Power Platform path?
That's an excellent question. And the answer may sound a little bit trivial there, but as part of our move and upgrade of the tools and stuff, we moved with the Microsoft 365 SKUs, and it enabled Power Apps and Power Automate and everything as part of the services. And the leadership, you know, took a step back and looked at it, and they were thinking, okay, we have this now. We can choose to be restrictive and restrict everything, mm-hmm. or we can enable everything and then, you know, all kind of shadow IT and things may happen, or we can pick a balanced approach where we can maintain the risk and governance and the benefit and provide, you know, these robust tools in the hand of our employees across the organization to be more productive and also upskill them. So that's the path that the organization followed. And when I joined, it was really focused on that aspect, building the guardrails, building the governance models and everything to deliver on that vision. And there was a frequent steering committee with different members in the leadership to just keep them up to date on what's happening, you know, get some guidelines and also some feedback from the community as well to deliver to the leadership. So it was, and it's still happening, but it's less frequent now that we are a little bit more mature in the journey. But this is how it started, and it was a great leadership direction that points us on that path and enabled us to deliver. Yeah.
Did it start with a single app or an automation? Do you know how it started as in, and this will lead into other questions like around, do you run a centralized or a decentralized approach? Do you run a DevOps type operating model? Being that you're in so many countries, how do you handle the distribution of your community inside the organization?
That's an excellent question, because that's something I suffered with in the first few months trying to read through literature and things that are out there about, you know, governing such citizen development programs in general, right? If it is Power Platform or not. And I realized that, you know, one of the things that I was talking to my team about at some point and being kind of candid with everyone about the vision on what we're doing as a center of excellence is that our job is to basically build, you know, this adoption model where it become embedded process across the organization, across different teams and you know, departments and everything, to the point where if you ask me in 10 years what is the right place for any center of excellence in any organization, it should be out. It should be done with the job. It should have been dissolved, and that becomes a standard practice across the organization. And believe it or not, if that's your vision, you will have a lot to do. Because mm-hmm. there's a lot of things to unpack. So we started with few apps. We created a small, you know, community for developers on Teams. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we started building the guardrails. And the basic guardrails for any organization, if you ask me as an advice for anyone who is looking at it today, is you need to start with basically the absolute necessity of controls like DLPs and stuff. These are, you know, all documentation would point you at that. But also you need to write down what are the terms of use of this service that are internal to your organization. Because every organization based on your industry or where you are, your standards of data handling, your standard of working with the platform will be different. And also building a code of conduct where you can, you know, write down, I call it internally kind of for fun, I call it our constitution.
Nice.
So it's the agreement between the users and the COE and the whole organization that these are the expectations when you work on this from A to Z. And these are the things that propelled us to keep moving forward. Because in my experience, whether from my background or what I've seen in the organization or out of the community, the vast majority of citizen developers are well-intentioned. They want to do things and they want to do it right. So, you know, these things guide them on how to do it right. And then they will follow. And that's where it was the building block that gave us some breathing room so that we can go back and start, you know, designing the strategy and what we need to implement for the broader organization and basically the decentralization from there on.
Let's say somebody in your organization messages you on Teams. I take it you're using Teams, right?
Yep, we do.
They send you a message and say, Muhammad, I've heard about this Power Platform thing. I want to build something for my department. Tell me about the journey you then take them on. Where would they look like on day zero of that communication with you? To a point where you have confidence in them, they've, you know, read your constitution. Like, what is that journey? Like training, adoption, what does that look like for you?
Yes, so that's actually a perfect scenario to walk that, because there could be different approaches. One is reaching directly to me or the team. Sometimes they get automatically added by their coworkers to the team of citizen developer community. And in some cases, because in our strategy, the personal productivity is open for everyone. So they go and attempt to build something. And within 24 hours, they get a welcome email from the automation of the COE that goes mm-hmm. and explain to them what to do next. So in that case for us, the citizen developers, those who want to become citizen developers, it has to be a conscious decision. And what does that mean is that we have a prerequisite of training that they have to do. And we are picking training from LinkedIn Learning. They do these, they get certified, they submit the form, and then they get into onboarding. The onboarding call is where we move through these, explain in these virtual calls, the terms mm-hmm. of use, the code of conduct and everything, and then take them to the next environment, which we call the team productivity, where now they can build and share versus in personal productivity, sharing and stuff is blocked. So they are kind of bound to, you know, being, you know, around the personal productivity space before they officially join the citizen development program.
Do you deploy them into their own dev environment, as in so they've got their own dev environment that they start in, or are they landing in default? And one other question, this is a follow-on from before. You talked about doing training on LinkedIn rather than Microsoft Learn, and I just want to understand your thinking there.
Yeah. So the Microsoft Learn is great. It's reading material. LinkedIn Learning is very well curated and is video and it easily divided into chapters and they can pause and go back to it. And it happens to be accessible for our employees as part of our broader benefit of learning. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's available, you know, go take it, get to learn it, you know, in a little bit with more example and stuff on your own pace. We try our best to respect the time of mm-hmm. all the you know, business users, employees, because normally this is not their primary task. So we cannot bring them into, let's say, a class or something to make sure that they get to learn. So they go and take that. It feels like it covers broader content, and because it's video-based, more than what you see normally in Learn. We advise people to go through Learn and, you know, get certified if they would like to keep growing. But that's just an option. It's not the requirement.
Yeah, yeah. Any particular course on LinkedIn Learning? Because I think a bunch of people will be like, whoa, I didn't even think of LinkedIn Learning as a resource.
We go with the essentials. So there is like Power Apps essentials. There's basics and beyond the basics, Power Automate basics and beyond the basics. And Power BI is a tricky one because the essentials of Power BI is very long. In our COE, we include Power BI. So
of course,
we chose to not require Power BI per se for the citizen developers, but we encourage them to get these trainings. There are multiple trainings like Power BI Desktop, there is a Power BI DAX training specific, and there is as well the Essentials, which is an extended one. So these are the basics that we put there as a requirement for the onboarding process. Yeah.
How do you handle evangelism of new apps that get created? Is it purely word of mouth? Is it you run regular, let's say, app showcases and look what we've done? And because, you know, that might spark ideas in other divisions, departments with other people, teams, etc. How do you go around attracting potential would-be future makers, citizen devs that want to get involved?
So that's an excellent question. And I will tell you frankly that we do not have a specific way of doing it. We do a mix of that. And it has to do with the nature of the growth that we faced. We had exponential growth in our adoption journey that it didn't give us the time to sit and work with that. It seems like the word of mouth and the user experience is just smashing it and is doing perfectly what needs to be done. However, we look at those, you know, the use cases that stand out, and we showcase them to the leadership of the functions that they are part of every now and then, so that they see what's going on in their areas. But at the same time, from a COE perspective, we are trying to do our best to be hands off. And one of the things that I keep talking about with my team and the rest of the organization is that we do our best to try to respect the segregation of duties. The COE has a potential of becoming an IT within IT, because you can do everything. And that will be challenging because you will be so dependent on the COE. That's one thing. And another thing, the upskilling of the other department within your IT will become a challenge. And the business users may be in a way higher, you know, skill set level, because as a citizen developers, they're getting there. So what we do is normally when we see cases like these, we go and talk to the leaders of those departments and make sure that they're aware, you know, for example, you are from finance, you are from, you know, HSE or whatever department, you know, you manage all the digital tools. Here's what's going on in your area, or these are some cases, you know, and what you like to do. And with that, we had success in multiple teams that are adopted the platform to deliver enterprise applications to the users, because they've seen the capabilities and they've seen the potential of converting, in some cases, what the users are doing. And then probably this is a good point to talk about a little bit about our governance approach, because what we did is we created a heat map, a risk-based governance approach. So what it is if you try to visualize or imagine two axes, like you have in your x-axis, in our scenario, we looked at the user base of the app. So as the user base grows between a small team into a department, into a business unit, into, you know, a business segment, and it, you know, grows. And in your y-axis, in the vertical axis, you look at, you know, the app risk for the business continuity. So is it low risk, no risk, high risk, critical? And basically, we put areas that are green zones for citizen developers, areas that are applicable for fusion development, and there are areas that are the zone that are not applicable for citizen development. And what's nice about this is that in an area, in citizen development in general, we practice reactive governance. If you want to think about it that way. So you react to what the users are doing. You make sure it's balanced in the right way. But sometimes things grow out of the hands of the business user. They create a great process. The organization loves it. next day they are presenting it to another business unit. The business unit adopts it and it keeps growing. What do we do? We apply that risk-based approach. So if the app started going into the yellow zone or the red zone, this is where we pull the stop and we go without disrupting the business, but we take the use case, we sit with the digital team assigned to the tools for that function, and we reach some sort of agreement of transfer of, you know, support or ownership and funding and stuff, so that the continuity, the business continuity, is not impacted, and the citizen developer is relieved as well. Because at some point, if you give them too much work, are they doing the job that they are primarily have to do? And that's where I'm very defensive and protective of citizen developers when it comes to that. It protects the company, but it protects the talents at the same time. Yeah.
Have you built an app or a dashboard that has those quadrants in it that you talked about, that an app automatically by number of users, you realize it's moved into, it's a critical application for the organization, number of people using it, that type of thing? Or is it something that you're looking at your dashboards and go, oops, that one looks like it's moved into the yellow, or heck, it's now at the point, you know, it could be higher, you know, on the red zone you talked about. Is it an automated thing? Have you automated that process, or is it, what does that look like?
That's a great question, because you're kind of started reading in my roadmap, and I don't know if I can talk more about that. But in general, we are doing it somewhat manually now through the dashboards and reporting that we have. But we intend in our plans to, automate the way we're looking at it and put it into the quadrants and everything, so we can address them. And all of this has to do with improving the functionalities of the, in the COE starter kit, there's a compliance center, but it's very basic. So we took it and we were adding a lot of functionality to it and questions and stuff that will eventually automatically put things in the blocks. When you have that, in addition to the telemetry, you will be able to tell immediately what is happening, and the teams proactively could see this dashboard from whatever function they are and could take action as they like. So that's our vision when it comes to maturing that side. Again, another theme of where we're trying to be hands-off, focused on infrastructure, focused on delivering the service and making sure everyone is empowered to work within their scope.
There's so many questions running through my mind that I want to drill into, and I can see we're at 30 minutes already. We might need to do a version two in a month or so time of this. You mentioned Fusion Teams there, which tell me that it looks like you've got a digital community, team that is bought into to do stuff at a larger scale than what a citizen dev could handle. Which is quite common, right? As in, because I see lots of scenarios where the business comes to the center of excellence and says, hey, we don't have any citizen developers, but we're going to go out to market and buy some technology to do something. You look at the requirements and go, man, that's a sweet spot for the Power Platform. We're already licensed. It's logical to do it on the Power Platform. So I take it then you have a team that could understand the requirements, choose the technology set that you're going to use, and build that and provide it back to the business. Is that the situation?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. So we have in the COE three major elements. The Power Platform COE has the Citizen Development Program Manager. So this Ben and the team focused on the citizen development aspect, hackathon, training, onboarding, all that, feedback from the community, engagement. And then we have the Digital Operation Manager, Uta, who manages end user support, administration, and all that focus that you need in the infrastructure side. And in my team as well, Josh manages the what we call the Power Platform Solution Factory. And we picked the word factory for very important reason, is that we will never support anything as a COE team. It has to land in the right support zone.
Gotcha.
So there will be cases where the business, they have citizen developers and they are willing to support things, but they really don't have time to build. and they have, you know, a budget to fund and do it. So this is where the app, the solution factory, come in play, spin out something quick and to do, and also it sets the tone in the organization of the standard of user experience and how to design application, the development cycle. So it becomes an all in all good practice because you are building that culture. Now, this is the COE model. We are now working on expanding that model on what we call the operation hubs, which is in different segments and areas. If they are willing to adapt this franchise or this approach as this federated model, they can go ahead and do the same structure, and then they will follow the COE guidance. We work with them closely on what they need to do and work with. And this is why today our successful fusion story so far is the is done with one of the digital technology unit of the another business segment, is not the COE. And we tell them, you know, there are different ways to do fusion. It's not necessarily that you are building or doing something. So in the case that we have, is they basically focused on bringing data from one of the ERP instances to Dataverse and have the citizen developers from there, you know, for example, build automation around PO headers or something, or integrate them in a workflow or whatever. So the job of that kind of fusion is, hey, we are the data stewards. We'll give you the data. We'll make sure it's accurate. We'll make sure it's consistent, and you build whatever you want with it, as long as you know, you are part of that unit and you can access it. So that's where we want. We don't want to tell people how to do it. We would rather see the creativity of every team on how they want to build their own fusion based on the function or the needs in different segments. So,
I love it. Mohammed, we're out of time. I feel we will do a follow-up if you're interested. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Well, thank you. This has been great. And yeah, there is a lot to unpack, and we'll look forward to talk to you again.
Hey, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Business Application MVP Mark Smith, otherwise known as the NZ365 Guy. If there's a guest you'd like to see on the show, please message me on LinkedIn. If you want to be a supporter of the show, please check out buymeacoffee.com/NZ365 Guy. Stay safe out there and shoot for the stars.